Okay, thanks. Good morning. Is that right for sound?
I guess so.
Okay. How many people have written a document, class?
Yay.
Ooh, right, okay. Right, well, that's it then. I don't need to do that anymore.
Oh, wait a minute. This is Adobe, isn't it? I can't hit enter, can I? Oh, maybe I can.
Oh, yeah, that's okay. Why did we use them? Well, they're supposed to provide consistency so that anything I do with the document class comes out, if you do something similar with it, you'll get exactly the same output. Now, you can go add your own packages, you can change fonts, or the other kind of things, but the consistency it provides is not necessarily in the output. You can change that. The consistency it provides is in the markup that you use to create the document. A document class provides you with a certain set of facilities which will let you create the document that way, which is supposed to avoid inefficiencies. Hands up those people who think tech is the most efficient system on earth. Oh yeah, that's like pretty good too, yeah. LaTeX comes with four sample classes: article, book, report, and letter. Right, now we get to the real counting. Hands up those people who have used the article class. Right. Hands up those people who have used the book class. Hands up those people who have used the report class. Ooh, right. Only a handful. Hands up those people who have used the letter class. Hands up in the air, those people who have used the letters. That's interesting. Actually, I wasn't expecting that. I was expecting more people to have used report than letter. We'll have a look at letter in a minute. Well, we won't have a look at letter in a minute, but I have a few things to say about it. The document classes can be reused or rewritten in their entirety, or you can write your own. But people don't do this as often as they might. Instead, they tend to start off their business cards with a line that says document class article, yeah, and then modify it to do something else. There is a lot of inherited complexity in the standard four classes because they have to deal with a lot of things that you don't have to deal with when you're writing your own. So there's a lot of things that you can avoid, but in order to know which bits to avoid, you need to know what's in there, which is why I said know thine enemy. The code isn't your enemy, but a lot of other things are. Most typesetting systems are programmable. Tech is programmable, 3B2 is programmable, Quark is programmable in some way. Word processors are not, generally. And even those that are don't have an awful lot of power to do anything with. So the power in tech lies in its extensibility by the use of macros, and that's why we've got LaTeX, Context, TechInfo, ePlane, and all the rest of it. But that's what we need to build on. If we can use automation better, we can use LaTeX to beat the competition. It is possible, but we need to be careful about what we do with it, which is why when you're constructing a document class or when you're constructing a new class of documents, you need to think about what it is that you're putting into them. So the four classes have a hybrid of LaTeX code and plain text code for a very good reason. The code is often very dense, and it's not something you'd normally want to give to beginners. That's the beginning of the article class. Most of that is reasonably obvious, and it's certainly repetitious, so you begin to see a pattern. Some of the later pieces of code, let's find a nice piece that isn't obvious. That is not immediately obvious to the beginner. It's very obvious to a lot of people who've done a lot of work with it, but it's not immediately clear what it's doing there or why it's there. So there are some things which need explaining, sometimes in considerable detail. But the existing classes do make an excellent starting point for development of something else. So in this presentation, I'm going to use the article class as the example. Book and report work in a very similar way, with some minor changes. Letter is different, quite radically different. And quite frankly, the letter class sucks. It implements a model of a letter which I thought had died out in the late 50s, where the text of the letter is centered vertically in the page. This is not the way that letters are done these days. Now, if you want a letter class, by all means use some of the cunning tricks that are in letter for splitting the name off from the address and this kind of thing. But in general, I couldn't put my hand on my heart and recommend the letter class to anybody for anything. Context, I believe, uses its own set of document classes. Who's, as Hans is not here, who is the resident expert in context? Who won't admit to being the resident expert in context? Okay, so we don't know. I've only used it in passing because I can't understand the documentation. So.
I think it's much closer to e-plane.
Is it? So you actually have to roll your own very much. Okay, so the same principles will apply. E-plane, as it says, explicitly has no classes because it doesn't presuppose any particular format or layout. It's just a set of macros to help you do it yourself. If you need something to read, then there are certainly four things that everybody ought to have a look at. The first is the LaTeX 2e for class and package writers, which should be on your system as text.cls guide. There is the Appendix 4 of the LaTeX Companion, and there is a paper from last year's PracTech Journal by Jim Heffron, Minutes in Less Than Hours, which is a worked example of doing this. And there is a much older document by Johannes Brahms, which was done for LaTeX 2.09, so in its technicalities are obsolete, but the principles are the same. So what we're going to do is dissect the article class, look at the sections and their orders. And of course, if we're writing a new class file, we don't need or want to have anything to do with LaTeX 2.09, because nobody will ever have written any historical files for our new class, by definition. So that doesn't apply. So we can get rid of all the compatibility layers. And we can then write replacement definitions if we needed. We can specify new values for lengths and counters, and then write additional macros. So if we kick in at the start, the first thing you need to do is to specify what version of LaTeX this will run with, the earliest version known to run. And the easiest way to do that is to look at any log file from your system and find the date string of your current version. Because if you're developing this on your own machine, then by definition, that's the most recent version that you've got. It may well work with earlier versions. Does it actually gag if you try to run it on an earlier?
It doesn't gag, it squawks.
It squawks, okay, so it doesn't come to a halt. The same would apply, to the name of the class. If this is going to be a class for a bill of lading for a transportation company, the lading bill there is the name of the document class. And if you, oh, that's the pointer, thank you. Bing. Perfect. That. If you start off your document with document class lading bill and you then feed it article.cls, it will complain because the name of the file does not match the name that you've specified. So the name that you specify in the document class command at the top of your document has to match not just the file name, but the name that's also in the description. Otherwise, LaTeX will say, you asked for whatever, but you gave me something else. You can then specify whatever you want here for the description and for the date. That's pretty much all that there is in metadata in a class file. The first thing that article kicks off with is to define at point size. It does it for a reason, because it's going to get reused later. Quite why it does it on the first line, I don't know, but it does it. It also specifies a couple of new if statements, one for restoring single column work, and one for whether you're having a title page or not. And the reason for doing them here is that they're almost immediately going to get used, and of course you have to define an if condition before you can use it. The title page one, in fact, gets used immediately, because the default is that in an article, you don't have a separate title page. As I said, the existing classes support 2.09 for compatibility, and all the statements in the class files say if at compatibility, something or other, else, something else, FI. And that handles whether someone has tried to use it with an old version of LaTeX or not. So we can get rid of everything from there up to else and just use the code that's in there. If we wanted to do the surgery, that's the only bit we'd have to keep. If you're writing your own, then you simply write your own. You don't bother with any of this at all. The next thing the article class says is what paper sizes are allowed. And in fact, it provided dozens of the damn things. There we go. A4, A5, B5. The B series of ISO paper sizes are for envelopes to enclose the A sizes. Letter paper, legal paper, executive paper. I've never seen anybody use executive paper. Ledger I've seen people use. And then landscape as an option. So there are paper sizes. As far as I know, the only two which are in any way common use are A4 and letter. A5 occasionally. There was a colleague of mine, no, wait a minute. It was Christina, wasn't it? Christina Thieler in Carleton University said that she went to her paper supplier for to see whether he could do a sack of A4 paper for a job she had to run. And she said, do you do A4 paper? And the guy said, yeah, sure, what size would you like? So as far as I know, provided you supply A4 and letter, if you even want to do that, and if you're doing this, for example, as a commercial job for a customer who is running this to a fixed known size of paper, then you don't even need to provide the options. You can simply fix it, fix the paper height and the paper length, and leave it at that. The type size options are done in a particularly Knuthian manner. Minimalism is everything here. 10, 11, and 12. The point size is defined as a single digit being the second digit of the point size. So 10-point type is results in 10-point type results in point size being set to 0, 11-point type results in it being set to 1, and 12-point type results in it being set to 2. This is later combined with a preceding digit 1 in order to form the name of the type size class option file which gets opened. So 10-point resulting in a 0 then gets prefixed with a 1, and size 10.clo gets opened. There was probably an easier way of doing it. But I'm not quite...
It doesn't easily allow you to have a 9-point.
No, I mean, it allows you to have a 14-point, and there is a 14-point size file around if you're doing books for people with damaged sight. And I think the Royal National Institute for the Blind in London, who use tech a lot, have an 18-point style file precisely for doing that. But yeah, if you want to do 9-point, you'd have to prefix it with a 0 or something to be consistent. I don't know how you'd...
Or just
trash the whole thing and fix it. Again, if you're doing this for one particular purpose, and you don't want to allow people the option to change the font, I'm sorry, to change the type size, then you don't even provide it as an option, you just fix the type size. Other options are defined with the declare option command, and they, in these cases, set values. You remember we set title page and one column as ifs. So we now have the title page true and title page false functions available. There are loads of other options, obviously. One side, two side, draft, final, title page, and so on. I'm not entirely certain what LEQNO and FLEQN actually achieve. Yeah. I've never seen anybody use them, so I'm not quite certain why they're there, but obviously they were important at some stage. But again, if you're doing this as a fixed specific job, you just provide the options that you want. You don't need to provide any flexibility. On the other hand, if you're writing it for the community, you may want to provide all kinds of other facilities. Any declared options, the defaults get executed first by convention. and the user-specified options get done next, so that the user-specified options are allowed to override any defaults that you have. So in the case of article, it performs execute options on letter paper 10 point one side, I can't even read that from here, one column and final, and then processes any further options that you provided. It then takes at put size, which remember was set to a single digit, and inputs a file called size1 and then either 01 or 2.clo, which is a class option file. So this is the mechanism by which you can include an external file of additional class material that gets invoked according to an option site.
So if you were writing something and you wanted to specify 9 or 8 point as your basic font, this is the line that you would change?
If you wanted to be able to specify that, you'd have to rethink the mechanism by which it opens the class option file. Because the way it's done, it will only work for values of 10 and up. There's no way it can work with anything below that, because it's going to prefix it with a 1 come hell or high water.
Yeah, okay.
So you would have to actually rewrite the entire mechanism to do that. Now, to be fair, it's not often that you want to set something in 9 point. Paperbacks get set in 9 point fairly frequently. I'm not aware of any general publishing that goes below 10 point for any good reason. Has anybody ever come across? Yeah?
I set the journal.
Yeah.
10 point, 2 column.
Yeah. It's certainly in 2 column where you can afford to go. You can afford to go to the smaller. Yeah. Yeah. 8 point. I don't think anybody sets anything by default in 8 point. I mean, 8 point gets used for a lot of other things, but very rarely would 8 point be used as a default, unless you're setting a pocket Bible. I mean, 6 point. Yeah, that's kind of reference material. You know, it's not continuous reading. Yeah.
In any case, you can set point size to something other than numbers. So you could say A for those special cases. So you can have size.
You certainly could. Yeah. CLO. Yeah. Yeah. A letter would do. That's a good idea. Nice solution. Cool. So the styling is dependent on the point size kept in the size NN, whatever NN evaluates to be. And there's one example. That's how small is defined. The way in which it's done is that to overcome the problem that command sequences cannot contain digits, the sizes are kept as Roman numeral values. So IXPT there contains the value 9. So set font size small as 9 on 11, 9 point, 2 point leaded. And there are values for most of those Roman values so that they can be used as control sequences. XPT, XIPT, XIIPT, XIVPT, and so on. If you open the size10.clo file, there are lots of these. Small footnote size, and then some rather less complex ones. Script size, tiny, large, 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 huge, and huge are all using these Roman numeral values so that they can be predefined elsewhere as control sequences. And this is what provides the flexibility of being able to switch from 10 to 11 to 12. Amongst the other things that the font changing does is not just change the size of the type, it also changes a load of the parameters that go with it. It changes above display skip, above display short skip, below display short skip, and it even changes some of the indentation of lists. So that if you do a list while small is active, as it were, then the spacing around lists will change. This, of course, may play merry hell with any attempts to produce a grid-based layout. I don't know whether Kaveh didn't actually mention that yesterday, but it would be interesting to know what would happen if you shunted into small type, because you would obviously lose your baselines, and not just the baselines, but you'd lose the baselines in lists as well as paragraphs. Yeah, if you redefine it as multiples of the grid, that's no problem, but by default, tech doesn't. It will overwrite that one. Paragraph indentation. Here is one of the ifs. If at two column, set length power indent 1m, else set length power indent 15 points. So by default, paragraph indentation is 15 points, unless you are, unless you're using two column option, in which case it's set to 1m. So you can certainly
unless
do that if.
Type.
I'm sorry?
Unless you're using 15 point type.
Unless using 15 point type, yeah, in which case they're the same. Again, if you're not going to be providing a two column option in your class file, then you don't need to provide this switch. You can simply set power indent to whatever you want it to be, and that's it. So this is only for the occasions when you're providing an option which you want to control, which you want to use as the control mechanism by which you change stuff. Three values, small skip, med skip, and big skip, which people use quite a lot. They would drive anybody using a grid absolutely scatty because they use a lot of flexibility. But again, those are based on the current, they're based on fixed point sizes. And then head height, head step, top skip, which was the one that somebody complained about yesterday, actually never knew top skip. Yeah, never knew what it was used for or why it was there. It's 10 point, so you may need to take account of that. Right. I strongly recommend that you ditch this and use geometry. It's much, much, much easier. There is no excuse these days for anybody to fiddle with any of those unless they particularly like programming. Here's a good example of the kind of thing you probably can get rid of. If at compatibility, this slot, else this slot, and it actually goes on further down to there. That you don't need the compatibility layer. You can get rid of that lot and just keep the bit afterwards. And get rid of the final FI, yes. Yeah. So if you want to set page area and margins, I recommend you use geometry. Don't even think of trying to fiddle with the individual values. They will drive you insane. Geometry appears to do the job perfectly, as far as I can see. You may want to change footnote spacing, which can get you into trouble because the footnoting mechanism is relatively complex. Again, most of the time it doesn't need changing. If you want to change the layer of footnotes, then there are at least six packages which can be used to affect the formatting and spacing of footnotes. And I would strongly recommend that you use those packages rather than trying to modify the code yourself. Again, float spacing, as we heard yesterday, floats can cause problems. There are packages which deal with that, unless you particularly want to disable all floats. And in the case of a highly specialist document class, of course, which doesn't have figures and tables, then you won't want those facilities anyway. There is some relatively complex code in the article class for the switching of margins in nested lists. And the spacing is quite subtle. It does involve a lot of stretchability and shrinkability, which a lot of people may not like. On the other hand, if you are trying to get a document class to emulate, for example, Office documents written in other inferior systems, then you probably don't want to spend too much time fiddling with the subtleties because people won't notice them. If you're doing it for a book or a journal or a magazine or something like that, then they probably will. There are spacing penalties for breaking pages and breaking lines. And then there is a slab of stuff which I have quoted in the full article, but it isn't here because it's just way too big to fit on the screen. So let's go back to the topics. For handling the running headers and footers. And again, I recommend that you use fancy header instead. Trying to change the internal code is complex and unrewarding. Again, fancy header, as far as I know, works okay. Somebody did ask me, who was it, about fancy header occasionally getting the wrong header on the wrong page. I've never had that happen. And if it does, then I would suspect that simply running the job again will probably fix it. But I don't know.
I have a bug in using fancy header with the bibliography environment.
Oh.
You have to turn fancy header to zero or plain.
Yeah.
While the bibliography is running, otherwise you'll get an error.
Oh, okay.
I haven't been able to figure out where, you know, what the error. It's missing a definition. So
oh, okay.
I just turn it off right before the bibliography and change it back to fancy.
Right. Yeah. I have other complaints about bibliographies, particularly that they ought to be set ragged right anyway. Well, simply because that they contain lots of non-normal words, like names. And I mean, if you're doing anything like that, then you shouldn't be even trying to justify the right margin. So these are some of the bits you've got. Again, here's an if-at compatibility for the text height, and then a whole bunch of settings for the else. And all this kind of stuff is dealt with by geometry. So there's very little point in trying to do that one yourself, in my view. There's more margin setting, and then even more of it. This is the kind of complexity that you can avoid by using geometry. It goes on forever, doesn't it? Footnotes. Footnote sep, footints, float sep, text float sep, int text sep, double float sep, and on and on and on and on. Most of these you can just leave as they are. They work fine unless a specification somewhere else is asking you to change them, then I'd leave them as they are. If somebody gives you a compositor specification, then clearly you're going to have to work to that one, and you're going to have to go through each one of these and check it off and find out whether you need it or not. If you're doing this for something of your own invention, leave them as they are, or change them if you dislike them. Here are the... Yep. Yes.
We had it before that this marker was defined with at EXPT instead of simply writing a 9. Why did they do it a way to make it that complicated instead of writing 8PT?
I don't know the answer.
I don't know.
The answer is in old systems, memory was short, so tech was compiled for very short memory. When you put PT, tech receives it as two tokens, P and T, and over the 2 points.
Ah, right.
So okay. There was strange things like P add for point, M add N E backslash, which is minus one. One is, it's lots of stuff we probably don't need on the modern machines because we don't have M tag. And unless we want to put tag in the PDA, we probably don't need it. But it's there and will be there forever.
Okay. It's a relic of the punch card era.
Yes.
Well, it was important then. Yeah, but I mean, a lot of things that were in SGML were done for saving space. Yeah, saving space on punch cards is the same as saving space in memory. When your memory is only the size of one punch card, it becomes really important. I have a chunk of memory on my desk. It's a 2K of ferrite wound wire core.
Oh, yeah.
From a Rank Xerox Sigma, which is the first machine I worked on. It's a big thing with handles that you can slide into them. Great. It's probably still, I mean, ferrite core doesn't lose its memory when you turn the power off. The damn thing has probably still got a Fortran program by any means. If I had the nerve, I'd wire it up to my PDA and get it out again. So, lists. Again, notice the use of the Roman numeral. List IIIIVVVI. In order to allow these to be used as control sequences, which it avoids you having to have an argument and lets you use them as control names. And those then reset the various sizes and spacings for lists at different depths. Depth 1, depth 2, depth 3, depth 4, depth 5, and so on. I mean, list VI. I mean, how many people write lists to a depth of 6? If you do, you should probably be taken out and strangled. I mean, it's really not reasonable. Although, no, I mean, there are kinds of legal stuff, for example, I mean, legislation where they absolutely have to provide subsectioning to that kind of level. Right, that was the class option file which dealt with sizes. Then it comes back to the main class file. We're at the end of size 10.clo. The title page, or the title block, if you're having it on the same page, is probably the first big change that you want to make in a class file if you're modifying something for doing with articles, because it's the first thing people see. And it's a place where a lot of people say, oh, well, this defines the look and feel. I mean, the rest of an article is paragraphs and lists and tables and stuff, which sort of look the same no matter what format you use within broad parameters. The title page looks radically different. An Elsevier title page looks quite different from a Kluwer title page, which looks quite different from any other publisher's title page. It's part of the brand stamping. So if you're doing an article, this is one of the areas which will need the most attention. Make title, which is what performs the function in the article class, doesn't need the compatibility layer. And if you are only defining one particular way of doing this, in other words, you don't have the option for a separate title page or non-title page, then you don't need the alternate definition, which you'll find in the class file. You only need the one. So you can simply renew command make title as one fixed change, and then give the formatting you want. And in there, you can use at author, which will reproduce the value of the current value of the author, at title, which will reproduce the current value of the title, and at date, which will reproduce the current value of the date, or today's date if you didn't specify it. If you want the subtleties of being able to handle multi-line, multi-author work, you have to do a lot more thinking, or you have to provide some alternate way of doing the markup, like having multiple author lines. There are many different ways of doing this. The default in LaTeX is to use a tabular mechanism for doing multiple authors. But how you deal with that is outside the scope of this, because every single journal article is different. They all do it differently. One subtlety you can introduce is subtitles, for example, and the mechanism all of these use is to define, using plaintext def at subtitle, as relax. Do nothing. Forget about it. Cross your legs and go away. And then new command subtitle with one argument does a global redefine of subtitle to be the value that the user typed in. This way you can then test subtitle for its existence. If subtitle is equal to relax, it means that the user never specified a subtitle, so do nothing. On the other hand, if they did, then you can change the font size, spacing, whatever it was, and output it. So you can use that mechanism of testing whether it's been used or not and then doing something to define a whole bunch of other stuff that you may want to put in there, like author's email addresses and various other bits and pieces, which will affect the spacing according to whether the author bothered to use them or not. You can therefore make quite complex make titles. The sectional command names, I strongly suggest you leave as they are. Don't change section to capital S section or to all uppercase section. It just confuses the user. I mean, the user has grown up knowing that you can type backslash S-E-C-T-I-O-N and get a new section. To be told that suddenly if you're writing for this publisher, it's not spelt like that, but it's spelt capital Z-E-C-T-I-O-N or something, because they don't want to interfere with what's there already. No, screw it. Use it as it stands. Redefine what's there and keep it simple for the author. The whole point of defining markup here is to make it usable by the author. Not you, not the publisher, not anybody else, but the author who's going to actually do the writing. SectStyle, which is what I use, but there are several others, let you redefine the style of the section headings. So if you only want to make minor changes, like changing fonts to be all sans serif for section headings, then use SectStyle and simply make the change. Don't bother to change any of the rest of the complex details. On the other hand, if you want to make major changes to whether they indent, how much space they've got above and below, and a lot of other things, you will need to use at start section, which is heavily documented in the LaTeX companion, but it contains a number, I think, 8 arguments, and you do need values for all of them. And they determine the space above the space below the indentation, whether or not it's a run-in title and, or whether it's, whether it contains vertical space or not. Whether it's got space coming, whether it has indentation following it or not, and so on.
I just had a user find an error in my class file, and you'll notice that each of the lines ends with a comment character.
Yep.
And the my error was that I had a line that did not end with
yep.
a comment character, and that
so you had an extra space.
Asterisk before this.
All right. Right.
So I added the all the preceding lines before the last one have to
yep.
have the comment character.
Yeah. And if you do this, then you will also will you need to redefine section star as well? No, you won't.
I don't think so.
No, you will. You can get away with just redefining the sections. Yeah. Okay, so there's the bunch that's done in article class. New command section, at start section, subsection, paragraphs. If you wanted to add a subsection, you could do so very easily just by copying that and then changing the spacing values. But you would need to read that section in the companion first to find out what they'll do.
If you do that, you also have to change the further levels. Or you may want to change
the right,
levels.
Your
well, well, yes, you'd want to change them for the purposes of numbering, but not necessarily for formatting, because from paragraph onwards they use run-in headings, not vertical headings. So.
But this affects what happens to your table of contents.
Oh, yeah, it'll affect a lot of other things, yeah, yeah. We mentioned the spacing of lists. There is also the spacing around lists. In this case, you've got the setting of left margin I, which is the left margin for the outermost level of listing. By the same token, left margin II is the spacing around the second level of lists. Left margin III is the spacing around the third level, IV for the fourth, and so on. And as what the way it works is that as you write deeper and deeper lists, left margin gets set to the value of the current level. So the first time around, left margin gets set to left margin I. The next level of listing, left margin gets set to left margin II. The abstract environment I have found frequently is the one people want to reformat most. There's a very simple way here of doing an abstract. If you're using a title page on the article, you simply redefine it to be the subsection star, no number, using the current abstract name, and the end of the environment simply ends the title page. That way, the abstract comes out looking like a subsection, which in fact is what most publishers' abstract formats end up looking like. Now, that mechanism can also be used for index, bibliographies, in fact, all the preambles. Thank you. The other structures can be redefined the same way. One of the things people frequently want to do is get rid of that ghastly indentation on the quotation environment, which should not be there at all. Table and box spacing and framing can be changed. And there are obsolescent commands, RM, SF, TT, BF. Somebody mentioned the NAG package earlier, a couple of days ago, which tells you when you use obsolete commands. Brilliant idea. Table of contents can be redefined the same way as the abstract. You can redefine the individual line entries, but there are packages like Tokloft which will allow you to do this without having to fiddle with the code. Bibliography and index environments can be redefined in the same way as the abstract, so you have consistency in all your preambles and postambles. Bibliography entry styles are a different matter. You've got to reprogram them in a BST file, and as that language is obscenely arcane, I don't even attempt to go into it. Footnote fence and spacing and section names. Don't forget, if you do make changes and you're going to want to use multiple languages, then make provision for them to be overwritten by the Babel package. And you can redefine the odds and sods like today so that it produces the date in the form which is suitable for the culture in which you're in. So the question is, do you want to roll your own or build it from scratch? I would strongly recommend building on the existing stuff and modifying it, unless you want to do something which is tied down so tight that the users or the machine which is using this will not be able to do anything different or wrong. That's a judgment you have to make as to whether you want to do one or the other. Writing from scratch is harder, but it does give you more scope for efficiency and automation. Modifying a class is quicker and simpler, in my view. There is a command load class, which we've seen, and there is also declare option, and there are options for passing the options of one class to its invocation by yours. So you can reuse existing code without the user being aware of it. You can redefine commands, add new commands, and you can also nullify commands that you don't want used, or you can set existing commands to an error message. Yeah? Renew command subsection, curly brace, don't use subsections in this document, curly brace, or something like that. The require package command, which we saw a couple of times already, which will load a package, but only if it hasn't already been loaded. And some of the most frequently used ones that you can get away with, geometry, multicol for multi-columns, fancy header we've seen, sextdy, C-caption for changing the formats of captions, and Babel. And finally, somewhere, I think it's the companion, says that in fact, every class file only needs four things in it. It needs to have normal size defined, it needs to have text width and text type defined, and it needs to have a specification for page numbering. If you actually wrote a four-line class file with those things in, it would actually work. I have absolutely no idea what you'd get out of it, but it wouldn't complain. And after that, it's yours. Thank you.